This is Building Bridges, your community and labor report, produced and hosted by Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash. I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash. Will President Obama's overhaul of health care be more than a Band-Aid? President Obama summoned health care figures of all stripes to the White House to debate ideas for overhauling the nation's costly system and declared the status quo is one option that is not on the table. He wants health care reform within a year.
Let's discuss what's on the table so far and what is the best way, the simple way, the economical way, the humane way to stop the bleeding with two of the leading voices for real universal health care. Oliver Fine, president of Physicians for a National Health Program and Doctor of Internal Medicine at the Weill Cornell Medical Center, and David Himmelstein, co-founder of Physicians for a National Health Care Program and professor of medicine at Harvard University.
Thanks for having me.
Why don't we start? Dr. Fine, you actually were at the meeting that was convened by President Obama. Let's begin to understand what exactly occurred there. What's on the table?
Well, essentially, President Obama did really say, as you heard, that the status quo is unacceptable. He had us all, you know, about 150 of us in the East Room of the White House. And then we broke into various breakout groups, roughly 30 or so people in each group, and then reconvened. And what I felt, actually, was that really solutions were not really being talked about. At this point, the Obama administration is leaving a lot of this up to Congress. So we didn't even talk about some of the things that have been projected as solutions. And certainly, unfortunately, the single-payer solution, the one that I advocate, was not really, you know, front and center, albeit that, you know, many of the people did refer to it and said that some of the proposals that are being talked about are not single-payer. So that's one of the senses that I got out of this healthcare summit, that the president at this point is going to defer a lot to Congress and at this point is not advocating a single-payer solution.
Dr. Himmelstein, since we've talked about what they are not talking about, which is a single-payer system, why don't you get us started on what is single-payer so that we can then later on talk about what some of the competition for single-payer would be?
Sure. Well, single payer is what we used to call simple national health insurance. Basically, government collects the money for health care as taxes and pays for virtually all medical care through a social insurance fund that covers all Americans. And it would eliminate the private health insurance industry, and instead we'd have one single payer for everybody. Some might call it an expanded and improved Medicare for everybody. We certainly wouldn't want to just adopt Medicare. It has a lot of holes and problems, but take that idea and upgrade it and expand it to the whole nation, and that's really what we're talking about. And that would allow us to save enormous amounts on the bureaucracy and profits that the private insurance companies inject into the system, more than enough to cover everybody who's uninsured and to upgrade coverage for the rest of us without any increase in health care costs. And that's why we're for national health insurance, because it actually could do the job, and the other alternatives on the table can't. They drive costs up if you want to actually extend coverage to more people.
What I like to say to people is that it's publicly financed health care. In essence, if your employer is presently contributing to a premium for you, you know, that money would go to the single payer, to the government. And you would not have this multiple private health insurance groups that deny care, that need prior approval all the time. You would have a single payer program. And then this would all be delivered through the same, you know, doctors and hospitals that you presently have, just the way the Medicare program exists today.
I just want to go back before we continue to flesh out the issues of single payer, and I know, Dr. Fine, you've even gone a bit further than that, and we've just talked a little bit off the air about the issues of a national health system, not unlike that which was instituted in Great Britain. But what do you surmise? And by the way, your critique was the same as the editorial of the New York Times, which says it looks like we applaud Barack Obama for wanting to overhaul the health care of our country, but in effect he's punted and said, hey, Congress, you do it all. There really aren't any details. But there are indeed some general proposals which you have characterized, Dr. Fine, as a kind of centrist and a right proposal. Can you tell us more about that?
Sure. I mean, I think that there are a number of things that have been talked about. One is a mandate, you know, that everybody, individual or employer mandate, that everybody has to purchase health insurance. It's kind of like car insurance. You own a car, you have to get car insurance. I guess you say if you are alive in the United States, you've got to get health insurance. This now seems to be favored by the private health insurance industry, because they hope that the products that they sell are the things that you're going to be forced to buy. Then on the other hand, there is what is called a public option that many liberal groups are pushing for. The idea that, you know, you could get a Medicare-like program offered to you at your employment, or if you were an individual that did not have health insurance, that could be offered to you. And the fundamental idea in this is that it might in fact be cheaper than the private health insurance option. The difficulty, of course, is that private health insurers will figure out ways to recruit the healthy and force the sick onto the public program. And we worry very much that then that public option will become so expensive that, in fact, it won't be available to most people. So this is what we call the health insurance death spiral. The healthy pay less, the sick have to pay more.
Dr. Himmelstein, the opposite was said by Senator Grassley in terms of the competition of a public-financed system with a private insurance system. He was basically saying that the private system can't compete with the public. Could you talk a little bit? It seems contradictory to me. He's saying that that would eliminate free competition.
Well, I think it depends a little bit on how it's structured, but we know from the Medicare program where private insurers have been competing with the public plan, that they undermine fair competition, that as Dr. Fine said, they find ways. I mean, you put your sign-up office on the fourth floor of a walk-up building and disabled people basically can't get up there, or more subtle tactics than that have been used. But they effectively dump the high-risk patients onto the public plan, but they'd rather not have to compete at all. So their first choice would be to say, well, just make everybody buy our product, and we have no precedent for that in this country of government forcing everybody to buy a defective product from a private for-profit company. But that's what they'd like as their first choice, and their second choice would be to say, well, if the public plan happens, we'll make sure that the competition is tilted towards us. The other thing that's a problem about it is you don't get the vast majority of the potential bureaucratic savings, because doctors and hospitals still have to keep track of who got every Band-Aid and aspirin tablet and do their billing and deal with the prior authorization paperwork, and all the stuff that's driving those costs up today remains if you've got that kind of system. So the so-called public plan option is viewed as kind of a liberal Democrats sop to the left, and the insurance companies would rather not have that at all, but it actually doesn't go very far. I mean, in a way, it's a commentary on how far to the right our politics have moved. It's what Richard Nixon proposed back in 1971 as a way to block Ted Kennedy's single-payer proposal at that time. I mean, what's being floated by the Democrats in Congress is virtually identical to Nixon's plan.
And one of the things I was interested in is the $634 billion over 10 years that the Obama administration says that it will commit. And what does that actually mean, and where does that get us? And where does that get us in terms of the fundamental or a fundamental problem, which is also at least 46 to 50 million people who are uninsured? Dr. Fine?
This is what he has called a down payment on some level for health reform. And there are some certainly positive aspects to it. I mean, he would increase the subsidization of programs like Medicaid so that the eligibility would be increased. He would do the same thing with the SCHIP program, which he has gotten reauthorized by Congress, both expansions of...
And the SCHIP essentially funds children's health care.
That's correct. Now, the State Child Health Insurance Program. Both of them public programs, not altogether the greatest programs because, frankly, you know, not every provider accepts their reimbursement. It is different in every state across the United States. So it is not a national health insurance program, and it is certainly not a single-payer program. The other things that he's talked about, expanding what we call health information technology, developing research around comparative effectiveness, encouraging primary care in the system. All of these are, you know, not bad things, frankly, but they're not going to solve the cost problem right away, at least. It takes a long time for health information technology to really make a difference in cost. At first, you have to put more money in to get everybody to use computers. So these are down payments that are not bad, generally speaking, but I'm not sure they're going to really in any way lead to a solution to the fundamental problem that we have, the high level of uninsured and the increasing number of people who are becoming what I call underinsured. That means that they spend more than 10% of their income every year on health care.
I'd like to explore the question of underinsured. I mean, a lot of people who even think they have good policies find out when they got sick that either they have to pay high premiums or deductibles or they're not being covered. Does the private insurance industry do a good job for insuring those people who are insured? Either one of you want to take that?
I think it's very clear that they do a terrible job. And with some colleagues at Harvard Law School, for instance, we interviewed people in bankruptcy courts around the country. And what we found is that healthcare problems are a cause of about half of all the bankruptcies in this country. And bankruptcy is very common. More American women file for bankruptcy each year than graduate from college. And medical bills are causing about half of those things are illness, and most of the people who were being driven into bankruptcy by medical problems had insurance. Most of them had private insurance, but it didn't do the job, and that's really an important lesson. And one of the problems with what's being proposed in Washington today is, while it gets some coverage for some of the uninsured at great cost, it actually doesn't do much for the tens of millions of people who have coverage but still would be ruined if they were actually sick. So we need to revamp this healthcare system both for the uninsured and for the insured, and leaving private insurance as the centerpiece just can't cut it, won't do the job. I might say I'd go even further than Dr. Fine and say, while computerization of medical care is a fine idea, I spent 20 years as a director of clinical computing at my hospital, there's no evidence at all that it ever saves any money. It may help you provide better care, and that's a great thing. But let's not fantasize that that's going to save us the money we need to get this healthcare system under control.
Well, let's not mince any words now in the sense that both of you are totally committed to what we are calling a single-payer health reform system. And it has to be clearer to people where we're at with that, what it really means, and how does that differ from, Ollie, what you were speaking about at one point, which was the issue of the national health system that exists in places such as Great Britain, for example.
Right. In some ways, single-payer national health insurance is a rather conservative idea because it's going to be called socialized medicine, but it isn't. In the UK and in England, the hospitals are owned by the government. Under single payer, we're not proposing that all hospitals be owned by the government. They would stay with their local ownership that they presently have, whether they're municipal hospitals or, you know, regular voluntary hospitals. Also, in the UK, doctors are essentially salaried by government, and we're not proposing in our proposal for single payer that all doctors be salaried in the United States. It's really, you know, a Medicare-like delivery system, but many people would say this is very conservative. We ought to, in fact, really move more to a national health service like they have in England.
Dr. Himmelstein, the opponents of single payer often say it may be a fine system, but it's utopian within the context of the U.S. We have no tradition of this, and people wouldn't support it. What's your response to that?
Well, we had a tradition of slavery once in this country, and we ended that. We've had a tradition of private insurance, and we've been waiting for 75 years for that to actually work for the American people. It hasn't. We have no evidence that it ever will, and strong evidence that it never can. So we actually need to get on to a system that we know can work. We know it can work because when we passed Medicare and Medicaid right about that same time, Canada passed a national health program very much like what we're talking about, and it's done a terrific job. They don't spend enough on health care in Canada. They only spend about half what we do per person. But for that money, they get incredibly good care, better care on average than even insured Americans get. So I guess the question is our country in such desperate shape that something that the majority of the American people want, and polls are very clear about that, most Americans want national health insurance, most doctors want national health insurance, most health economists say that's the best option for reform. If that's not possible because corporate interests are so powerful in this country, then we need much more thoroughgoing change even than national health insurance. But I'm still optimistic that something that is vital to the survival of our country, I mean, life and death for tens of thousands of Americans every year, that finally, in the end, our government can do it. I think we're reaching a crisis point. It's a crisis point not just for the uninsured but for the insured. And there's a potential coalition which is enormously powerful. And, you know, just the fact that Dr. Fine was invited to the White House summit, I think, gives some clue as to how powerful that is. When the summit invitee list was first announced, there was no single-payer person included. And there was an outpouring of demand on the White House that was unacceptable, and a threat of demonstrations outside the White House. And at the last minute, they issued an invitation to Dr. Fine and Congressman John Conyers from Michigan, who's a staunch single-payer supporter. So we know we can make political changes in this country. We just actually need to assemble the power to do it.
One of the sidebars is that two powerful unions divided over the issue during the summit and withdrew from the coalition. Dr. Fine, can you tell us more about that, what the nature of that dispute was?
Yeah, my understanding is that this was called the Dialogue Project, which included, large insurance companies, included representatives of pharma, particularly Billy Towson, that is to say the drug companies, and SEIU and Ask Me, the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Workers, withdrew from that coalition when it became clear that they would not be able to reach a consensus on the public option that we talked about before. The public option that we're not confident is actually going to work. These unions at least said, you know, this is ridiculous. When we try to accommodate the private health insurance industry, we're not going to get a real reform.
Dr. Himmelstein, in the poll in January, New York Times CBS poll seemed to be resounding support for single payer. Is it mostly the money of the insurance companies that's driving this opposition?
Well, it's the insurance companies, the drug companies, the for-profit hospital companies, and the for-profit nursing home companies. There are many mouths feeding at the trough at this point, and that's powerful money. I mean, we're talking, you know, the insurance companies make something like $10, $15 billion a year in straight profit. They waste much more than that on the bureaucracy that they need to collect that profit. The drug companies make, $40, $50 billion a year in profit. And national health insurance wouldn't wipe out the drug companies like it would the insurance companies, but we'd say to them, we're only going to pay a reasonable price for your drugs. We're not going to pay the highway robbery kind of prices you're charging today. You know, there's been a lot of discussion in this country of importing Canadian drugs, which is kind of bizarre because a lot of those drugs actually come from the U.S. What we really need to do is import Canadian prices for drugs and say to them, we're going to pay you no more than people elsewhere pay for your drugs. And what that means to the drug companies is we're going to cut your profits down from outrageous levels to just, you know, healthy profits. Now, to my mind, we maybe ought to think of going further than that, but at least as a first step under single payer, we'd say to them, look, you know, the Fortune 500 makes 4%, 5% profits. You've been making 15%, 18% profits. Let's get you down to an average normal level.
Dr. Fine, how do we get on board and push that option or make it a real option?
Well,
single payer, health payer. Now.
Right. Number one, you should know our website and how to get in touch with, you know, our organization to get more information. And that is www.pnhp.org. Lots of good information. Secondly, invite a speaker.
Many more discussions on this issue. Critical. The voters tell us that every single election. We need real universal health care. We need a single-payer health care system. Dr. David Himmelstein, co-founder of Physicians for a National Health Program and professor of medicine at Harvard University, and Dr. Oliver Fine, president of Physicians for a National Health Program and doctor of internal medicine at the Weill Cornell Medical Center. Thank both of you for being on board. We'll get the rest of the folks there with you, and we're going to get a single-payer health system.
Thanks for having me.
And now, Healthcare Justice by Colette Washington from the California Nurses Association.
I have a dream.
Healthcare.
One day.
Justice. Healthcare. Justice.
America of the people, America by the people, America for the people. Which people are you talking about? Are you talking about the wealthy with the means to stay healthy while 47 million go without? No doubt, we need a revolution. It's time for a brand new healthcare solution. Sing it on behalf of the uninsured, because I believe it's so absurd for America, the so-called greatest nation, to be in a healthcare crisis situation.
Someday, this nation will rise up.
Justice. Come from the land of milk and honey.
United we stand, divided we fall.
But the healthcare industry's addicted to money.
All for one, not one for all.
47 million in dire straits,
excluded by greed and wealth.
So we got to get united in these states
and put the care back in health.
Come on, y'all. Sing healthcare justice for all. How can you sleep knowing you make promises you never keep? Life is short and talk is cheap. Time has come for you to earn your keep. Money and politics corrupting democracy, creating a hopeless healthcare hypocrisy. It's hard to see beyond your illusion. A misconception lies and confusion.
Every hill and mountain will be made low. The rough places will be made plain. And the crooked places will be made straight.
America is a melting pot.
Or is this a false accusation?
Of the have-to-haves and the have-to-have-nots.
We're waiting in anticipation.
Sing up here like Johnny on the spot.
In every other industrialized nation.
So when will we have what we have not got? Talking about a do-or-die situation.
No, we are not satisfied, and we will not be satisfied until justice rolls down like waters and righteousness like a mighty stream.
Well, this has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our new website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.